Okay, we have Resolution 23-648, moved by Councilor Haskell, second by Councilor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby reconvene into regular open session of Council at
6:35
p.m. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. And Resolution 23-649, moved by Councilor Pekkanen, second by Councilor Zulak. Be resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby accept the reports, recommendations, and directions arising from the closed session held October 17th, 2023. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. In the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation, we wish to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. To honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they have carried for thousands of years, we pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit, and work towards truth and reconciliation. Start with a roll call for the regular session.
Councillor Morley Haskell.
Councillor Nick Ryland.
Councillor Debbie Zulak.
Councillor Mike Hakkinen.
Clerk Administrator Ina Watkinson.
Deputy Clerk Carly Britton.
And Mayor David Bourne. Are there any declarations of pecuniary and or personal interest and the general nature thereof? Hearing none. Continue with the agenda. Now we've moved. The initial motion was to move number 11 ahead of number 10, so we'll start with delegations and presentations. And if Ethan is prepared, we would start with the eScribe Meeting Solutions. I'll ask
Good Carter. Evening, everyone. I'm Ethan Dreger. Thank you so much for having me. Live in Paris, Ontario, and looking forward to presenting to you about eScribe Agenda Management Solutions. I'll just go ahead and share my screen here quickly, of course. eScribe is born and raised in Ontario. How we got here today is I've been chatting and learning lots about the process through Deputy Carly and learning how the agenda is mainly prepared today. I understand that the main request from Council is to be able to live stream and run, enable your video of Council through YouTube in the interest of increasing transparency for your engaged members of the public and residents. Throughout this process, we've learned a lot about not just the video piece, but also a number of other challenges touching all facets of the township itself, which I'll talk through in just a moment here. Whether it comes to the manual agenda creation process itself for the clerk team, lack of available transparency for the public itself. So we'll start off with transparency. So I know you have an engaged neighborhood and resident group, but it's hard for them to find all the information that they're looking for in a concise way. And there's not an easy way to provide video for your residents to look back on what occurred and identify those within longer council meetings. Just talking through some of the challenges I've identified, and then we'll get to some outcomes that come with that, and I'll provide a little more background on eScribe in just a moment. There's a manual creation process. How the agenda comes together is quite time-consuming, which leads to efficiency challenges and takes away from being able to focus on strategic work and rather results in administrative burden. So the email and printer for today, as you know, reduces the amount of time available to focus on those strategic initiatives. And lacking a centralized location for all those documents and the process itself leads to some challenges around redundancy. So what happens if Carly wins the lottery? At closed sessions, there's I know that you receive your in-camera documents just liability standpoint as well, liability around that, how agendas are posted, access for folks with things like screen readers, et cetera, if we need those accommodations. And then also to the paper printing cost, I apologize, this report's challenge piece. I just realized this slide has been missing one piece, so I'll disregard that. But the paper printing costs as well, too. It's costing upwards of $600 per meeting to print out the agendas themselves, and that's on top of the additional paper involved throughout the township. And long, large agendas, lots of attachments that are challenging to post on the website to the point where we have to share, print those down to different documents so that they can be accessed. A little bit about eScribe quickly. We are born and raised in Ontario, used by over 200 municipalities across the province, from small communities, the township of the archipelago being one of our smallest, population of 500 people, all the way up to the city of Ottawa. I've pulled a few local-ish examples as well. If you know any folks in any of these communities, I encourage you to ask how their experience with eScribe has been. But ultimately, lots of folks using us. It's a scalable solution designed for small communities where folks wear many hats to be able to be efficient in their role, and then up through to larger cities, which I realize is not relevant, and that's okay. So, by bringing on eScribe as a potential idea, and I'll show some examples of what eScribe looks like in just a moment, some of the outcomes that could be achieved. First off is increasing the access and transparency for your residents. I'll show an example in just a moment of how the council video can be easily posted, not just to YouTube, but be side by side with the agenda. eScribe automatically timestamps the video or bookmarks it. So as a resident, if I only care about item 14, I can click on that item and it takes the video right there so I can get what I need. And the other piece is being a smaller, more remote community, we can improve access for those slower internet connections, those folks that might not have a high-speed internet connection itself, rather than having them wait for a very long time to download significant PDFs, etc. For yourselves, giving you as council members, giving you easy access to previous meetings. You could look back on motions, look back on conflicts of interest that have been declared, all from an easy-to-use app on an iPad or on your computer. This could allow you to vote directly from the app if you wanted to, declare your own conflicts of interest, and also receive your in-camera confidential documents securely, which can that access can be controlled to make sure only the right eyes see them without the risk of losing an envelope or something like that. This should say, that it's reduced accessibility liability. All the documents that are created within eScribe, it's all about automating the agenda creation process. They're AOPA compliant, so less exposure for yourselves there. Saving printing costs. Having everything easily accessed at any point in time in one single location, and ultimately enabling more efficiency within the administration so that they can focus on those more important facets of their jobs. And I made the joke here again, what if Carly wins the lottery? It gives her more time back in her to focus on that strategic work. And we're also seeing this as an attraction for attracting new employees themselves, that people are looking for technology when they come into their roles. So I just pulled a couple of quick screenshots from here of eScribe. There's not enough time to walk through everything within the platform today. I know the main goal is having your video readily available for your council members. The outcome, I pulled this example from the city of Port Colborne. Their agenda, which is created through eScribe, we see on the left here, and the video on the right-hand side are automatically and easily married up so that I could click on this special council meeting item and it would advance the video directly to that. So again, as well, where you can get your agendas in advance, look back on historical meetings, search for items, search for content, receive notifications, and secure communication. But ultimately, give you an electronic agenda in an easy-to-use format where you can highlight, make notes, scribble on it, etc., and with the goal of being best prepared for the meeting with the interests of the environment and reducing paper printing costs. Again, a single source of truth for meetings and reports. What we see here is an administrative view. So all public-facing meeting types can be automated in their creation and run directly through eScribe, where we can see, in this case, a few upcoming or previous council meetings. And this is readily accessible so that someone could pick up, you know, if Carly, sorry to pick on you, but you know, if you're sick for the day, then someone can jump in and take over rather than having to try to keep in contact. And lastly, just that templated agenda prep for the administration themselves, making it very simple for them to add new items, add votes. We can run have electronic resolutions here as well, too. And like I said, track conflicts of interest, add tasks that can be assigned to administrative staff, etc., so that we can reduce the amount of time preparing the agenda while increasing transparency for the members of the public themselves. And then as far as taking minutes as well too, I think this is the last slide, but the clerk's team can also take minutes during the meeting or after the meeting and have them more quickly readily available for yourselves to easily add those to future meetings to be voted upon, and reduce, again, the amount of time spent preparing these documents themselves. So, thank you so much. I appreciate the time. Realize this is just a really quick high-level overview, ultimately going beyond just giving you more than video and enabling further transparency for your members of the public, but making everything run more efficiently and having everything accessible in one location at any point in time. So thank you. I'm going to open it up to any questions if there may be any.
Okay, thank you for the presentation, and certainly appreciate your sending this information to us beforehand so we had a chance to review. I watched the Port Colborne council meeting that you had referenced, and I was just wondering one thing there were the camera angles. Now, I know you probably don't have much to do with that, but we have one camera angle, I believe, here. They had two or three, and they kept zooming in and out in different locations. Is there a problem just having the one camera on the actual...
Great question. No problem there. Yes, you're absolutely right. The multi-camera shots, etc., that's out of our wheelhouse, for lack of a better term. No problem just having that single location for your camera as you do today. Many communities like yourselves do have just that single camera setup.
Now, the other question on that, you mentioned live streaming. We've watched a few in the area who do the live streaming, but it's there's no audience participation. The people can't actually join in unless they have a deputation. They can watch it, but they can't actually zoom in and discuss. Right now we have the Zoom capability where they can participate as the meeting goes on, just like we're doing now. If it's live streamed, is there any possibility for the public to get involved during the meeting, or do they have to just wait for the YouTube to come up later?
No, also another great question. The way this actually works is that you would continue to use Zoom so that public could continue to remain engaged and participate in the meeting itself. But the webcast pushes through Zoom to YouTube live. So effectively, during whether it's in the live meeting or afterwards, the look and feel would be much like what I'm seeing right now, seeing the Zoom meeting itself. So you still need to retain Zoom, but it would still facilitate that participation with your resident.
Okay, the other question, back to the Port Colborne one, I guess I noticed that the mayor was actually deleting items from the agenda, and there was no evidence there as I watched it what the items were. He just gave numbers. There were no, maybe this is beyond your wheelhouse too, but he was just giving items by number and not naming them. And yet the public had no agenda in front of them as they watched the screen. So I'm just wondering, how does that involve the public? Can the public have an agenda? You mentioned, I think, that the agenda can be there while they watch, or is that something separate?
Yeah, that is very possible. I'm getting the impression, I'd have to take a further look at the port folder when it sounds like part of that might be procedural and maybe questionable, just having some fun with that. But there is an easy way to set up that such that the view would have, you'd have the public display, so like the agenda view for members of the public to see that, and then your video side by side as well too. And I can send an example of that to Carly afterwards as well.
Now you mentioned confidentiality as well. I'm wondering who from eScribe would have access to all of these files and the confidential information.
Yeah. So, correct, we don't have access to the information that you put within the platform. Think of it as if we provide the plumbing and framing of the house, but not the contents inside. But don't have, I can't think of a better example, but we don't have access to that information. There are lots of policies in place around that. We have an access to customer data policy that we can share as well to recognize that concern by all means, and it's something that we come across with major communities as well too. So I can certainly share that, but can assure that there's many securities around it.
And one further question I had was, with maybe this again beyond what you do, but most of our documents are PDF, and when we go to search for something, of course, it makes it very difficult by topic, unlike a Word program where you can actually do a search and a find. When they're stored even here, I think, in the township as PDF. So it's very difficult for us to go back, other than to find a council meeting on a certain date. Then we have to go through and figure out what documents, what was talked about. Is there any way of, I know you can't save it in Word because then it can be changed, but for easy access for council members to go back to a particular topic, it's very difficult for us, other than to keep a hard copy and actually find it.
Mm-hmm. Two thoughts there. So one, from the council perspective, the app, which I don't have it set up just in the interest of time to show exactly what that looks like, but I did have a little screenshot there. Maybe I can jump over to that again. Sorry, it's not immediately coming up, but ultimately within that app there is a search functionality, so you can just type and look for previous items. It's not just the agenda or meeting title, but it will search for reports and other items that have been added to that agenda. So it makes it easier for you to look back on historical information, also motions, resolutions, etc. So you're able to easily find that information within the app. And then from the public's perspective as well, what it alluded to, easier access for low quality internet connections. And what I really meant by that, just what I'm up, this is the town of Madoc, just going, this is their public council page, which is created by eScribe. When I look at this agenda, oh, they don't post it in HTML. I'll have to show a different example here. Going back to the port folder example. So this view of their agenda is what we call our HTML view. This is, makes it easier, it loads faster if someone has a lower quality internet connection because it's not downloading that whole PDF. And then the supporting documents are separated out on the side. So here, if I wanted to look at this correspondence item from the town of Grimsby, then I can just click on and locate that item. As well, to going back to Madoc, I was looking to see if they use the HTML publishing, but there's a public list search function as well too. So I can search for an item. I was on the City of Hamilton site yesterday and looking for different neighborhoods. So I typed in Ancaster and was able to find a number of items that contained Ancaster within them. So increasing search function for both council as well as members of the public. And then another byproduct of this view here for the members of the public is that this
sure, you probably can't answer this, but with our own township website, I don't believe, now maybe Carly or Ina can correct me on this, that we have a search engine that people can't even type in what they're looking for and find something on the site. So we have some updating to do there, obviously, with our website. But
so that actually is, so eScribe helps with that as well. So it lists your website for council, and I can't speak to the search functionality directly, but I do know that your agenda packages are so large that they need to be split out into three different items. Sometimes you have two or three, et cetera. I'm making an assumption here, and forgive me, clerks, that I'm sure it's more time consuming to split those out and post multiple items, but as well, maybe it's out of the interest of trying to make it easier for those low bandwidth internet connections. So the way that eScribe works, and going back to this Madoc example, is that this calendar that we see here is from eScribe directly. So this is all included as part of the main package where the clerks team clicks a button to publish out the agenda to the public, and it's a different button for council members. But this calendar here would then see that agenda that they published. So I guess what I'm saying is this is acts as a website within your website, enables that search functionality for your constituents, and easier posting of documents as well too.
Other questions? Councillor Kagan?
So I did take a look at your eScribe website, and one thing that I was interested in was the software that's able to generate reports. And I'm just wondering, and I did see some comments regarding the agendas and feedback from users of your system that indicated that the time it took them to create the agenda package dropped from 2 days to an hour. So I'm just wondering, so this sort of goes along with the report generation as well. How does that work? Because I'm assuming that your software is a content manager, managing software, where it makes it easier, it's managing through some templates, how to sort of input the stuff, but it still seems to me that you would require the staff to take the time to put the to get the content together in whether it's generating a report or an agenda. So maybe we can get a little further explanation on that.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's a couple of different facets or a couple of ideas come to mind or thoughts. So breaking it down by agendas versus reports. So for the agenda itself, most of that is templated and automated, and it's two clicks to add a new item. And then some byproduct thoughts are if there's a revised agenda, a last-minute addition, etc. It's two clicks to generate a new agenda and publish that out to the website through eScribe. So very fast on the agenda creation side. Now the report creation side, we do have a module that to date has not been part of the conversation, but happy to explore and discuss further with the administrative staff. We can automate and template out the reports, create the report creation itself. A few byproducts or wonderful outcomes of that are, one, templates can be locked down so that we can make sure we're getting only the right information from staff without having report template creep, which tends to occur when everyone has their own. They can be updated at any time. There's version control with them. But the beautiful thing is that the way that we approach report creation is that it pops open Microsoft Word, which everyone knows how to use, hopefully within the administrative staff. So they log in, like create a report, they can add any attachments, and then pick which agenda is going on. They fill out, that Word pops open. And then they just fill out the different sections that they're asked to fill out. And then that document is connected to eScribe, and eScribe actually pulls the right out of that word report itself. So whatever their recommendation is, or motion, or whatever, that recommendation is pulled right off that Word document and creates a motion in e-scribe. So less time for the for the clerk's team to apply the there's no copying and pasting and opening up room for error and rewording things, etc. So Word-based reports connected with e-scribe, locked down templates, as well. What I haven't mentioned is that there's even an online approval process as part of that available as well. So it would give the administrative staff real-time insight into the status of any reports. So they can see, as one in draft, who's it sitting with for approval, whereas today they might be emailed around or even just dropped on someone's desk for being entered in. So a much more efficiency there. For many communities, it's the number one reason that they moved to e-scribe is because of our approach to report creation. So happy to explore that further. And alternately, it's something you can grow into over time as well. You can start small and grow into different modules over time.
Yes, go ahead.
Are you going to be forwarding a cost structure for the different modules that are available through e-scribe to the municipality?
Yes, I can. I will. Costs have been discussed effectively. We've discussed them at a high level, but there's some more items coming out of communications today, so we'll get a formal proposal over. Effectively, everything is cloud-based, so this also means it's IT light. Don't have to engage your IT contractor too much, other than generally I'm thinking about the scope of this engagement, and it wouldn't really be much, if anything at all. We take on all the training and implementation. Our team builds out templates for you, trains everyone how to use the system, and we get a lot of really great feedback about our approach to support. It's a huge, huge focus of ours to make sure that everyone is comfortable and has people to contact at any point in time. So I will get an updated proposal over. The cost is an annual subscription because everything is cloud-based. So you can log in and access from any website, no additional software needed. Annual subscription, and there are one-time implementation fees. And we do price based on population size, so we understand you're a smaller community and we price appropriately.
Thank you. Other questions from council? Well, any questions from the public? Since you're here.
Go on, Kelly.
Well, I'm sitting here wondering if they would incorporate township committees for this, probably. They have enough fields.
Well, that's something you'll have to discuss, I guess, with administration, too.
Sure.
Committees, yeah. Well, thank you very much.
The question was directed at me. I guess not.
Well, she was wondering about committees, and we would have to discuss that ourselves here, and whether committee agendas and that sort of thing can be done through the system as well. So.
They certainly can. You can run all of your public agenda, create all of your public agendas for all your different meeting types, and that's included with the base package as well, too. So you can provide online agendas for committee members as well, too, if so desired.
Do I have a question?
Sure.
Question for you. Yes, it's going to be searchable within your system, but is it possible to make sure agendas and some personal information and other stuff discussed is not indexed by Google? That's a key difference, because otherwise everybody's information will be immediately online. And again, I understand the need for search function, but can it be contained within the system, not within the world?
Yes, there's a lot. I'm trying to think of the best way to word this, but yes, there are many securities and role-based permissions, ways to lock down the information that is not meant for the public. I'll use the in-camera confidential session agendas as that example. We can make sure that sensitive information or information only is seen by the eyes that are entitled to see it. Not everything that's instantly created in eScribe is automatically published out to the website for all to see. That's done with a very structured process and a couple of extra clicks to push that out to the website. So yes, we can certainly make sure that we're not getting that personal information out there.
Sorry, please answer one specific question. Indexation by Google, can it be turned off or not?
So you don't want items to be searched, or what's the context?
No, I would like it to be searched within the MacKellar website or whatever package you guys provide, but not by the world. So let's assume today we discuss John Doe's application with all his personal information, address, name, and everything, which is fine for us to search it within their community when they log in or go into the website, but not somebody from Bangladesh typing his name and seeing the whole information, address, his name, his all the personal information.
Right. Now, is that information posted within your public basic agendas today?
Yes.
Okay. Then I truly don't know the answer. I will find out and report back. I'd rather admit that I don't know than report back with an honest answer. So I can table that one, and I will provide that answer back to the first team.
On mute, but thank
you. Is there anybody on Zoom right now who wishes to ask a question? Okay, well, thanks very much for your presentation, and I'm sure you'll be in touch with our administrative group here, and if there are any further questions, and as Councillor Kekkonen mentioned, you'll be sending a cost estimate as well, so that's what we'll look forward to.
That's great. Thank you so much, everyone. Appreciate your time. Have a great evening.
Great.
Thank
me
you.
Too. Thank you. We have Resolution 23-650, moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Haskam. Be it resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the deputation from Ethan Greger, Account Executive with eScribe Meetings. Any discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. And we have 11.2. 2023 Lake Water Testing Results in the Township of McKellar. Jennifer Gant Fuller, Chair of the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee, and the Lake Steward for MLCA. Hopefully your mic is working.
Testing. Is it on? Yeah.
Sounds good.
Okay, so you've received the results that I sent in the initial application to do the deputation this evening. So this is just a general address. But we have the benefit of multiple guidelines for studying the health of the lakes in McKellar Township. One such guideline is the Ontario government's Lake Capacity Assessment Document. Another is the document entitled State of the Basin, a report on Lake Manitowabing written by Bev Clark in 2018. A third is the 2021 Lake Capacity Assessment completed by Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee member and U of T professor in limnology, Carl Mitchell. Those guidelines have in common the following elements. A, it is important to look after the health of our lakes in order to preserve water that is healthy for household use, for recreation, and for the habitat of all lake species. B, maintaining long-term records of lake profile data is the best way of monitoring how we are doing in maintaining the health of township lakes. C, the most important component in measuring lake health is the phosphorus level, with the other profile data used to measure what contributes to the phosphorus levels and what effects those levels may be having. Phosphorus levels determine the trophic level of the lake, with low phosphorus levels defining oligotrophic lakes, medium levels defining mesotrophic lakes, and high levels defining eutrophic lakes. Lake Manitowabing is a mesotrophic lake, which indicates a good balance between plant productivity, not undergrowth or overgrowth, and wildlife and human occupation. The other five lakes studied in the township are also mesotrophic, with gray owl being a possible exception. It may define as an oligotrophic lake, except that there was one outlier result in June that was quite high, so it was remeasured. And I think that was just, as I said, an outlier. Our goal is to contain the effects of human settlement on the lakeshore in terms of phosphorus inputs by addressing the issues that lead to increased levels, such as failing or inadequate septic systems, removal of shoreline vegetation in the littoral and riparian zones, which would otherwise trap the phosphorus and prevent it from entering the lake in rainwater runoff, and the proliferation of lawns, along with the use of fertilizers for those lawns. Education of property owners with respect to these issues can protect the ecosystem integrity of the lake. E. coli levels are calculated according to 7 general areas in Manitowabi Lake, and there were 21 monthly averages calculated. So each area had a monthly average calculated for June, July, and August. 6 of those averages were over 100, with another 7 being between 50 and 100 coliformia per liter. The one comparison I found was a summary of E. coli data for the Kawartha Lakes, which showed 50% of their levels were under 50 coliform units. So Manitowabin levels would seem to be somewhat higher than those levels in the Kawartha Lakes. The other 5 lakes were generally somewhat lower than Manitowabi. E. coli contains phosphorus, so the two measurements are related. You have the reports, which were sent ahead last week, of the E. coli measurement data and the phosphorus and calcium and profile measurement data, and also the financial expenditures that were made to gather this data, which came in within our budget. And I have the list here of the financial expenditures that I sent in last week. Costs of monitoring the health of McKellar Township lakes for 2023. The McKellar Township 2023 budget allowed $4,000 for E. coli testing, $4,000 for phosphorus and calcium testing, and $150 for the purchasing of standardizing solutions, totaling $8,150. The actual costs were $4,350.21 for E. coli testing, $2,038.02 for calcium and phosphorus testing, and $209.05 for the standardizing solutions, totaling $6,597.28. So our costs were under our estimated budget. And since those costs have been initially covered by MLCA, I'm hoping for a resolution as has been the historical case for the township, to be billed for those costs by MLCA. So I'd be happy to try to answer any questions that you might have.
Thanks very much for the presentation. Very detailed information. I'm wondering, as you collect all of this over the years, was there any reference to the Mikulski study that was done back in, 2009-10, when the interim control bylaw was in place, and he was his study was very in-depth at the time, and I'm wondering if it's gone back that far, or whether you just started with more recent data?
That's the first I've heard of that study, but it sounds very intriguing. Where would I find that?
Should be files here, I would think. Very detailed. He had right around all the lakes, and I don't know whether you're aware of the interim control bylaw was in place for 1 year and then extended while they're studying all the lakes. It was all due to a development on a piece of property near the village, and we needed all of this information on all of the lakes to see if they could actually accommodate, I guess, the further development. It was the Wyridge.
Wyridge. I was at those meetings, so
yeah,
but I didn't know the name of the report.
Yeah, Mr. Mikulski, he did very extensive studies and was in contact with the Ministry of the Environment and actually coming up with our study for our lakes, that we came up with the official plan and what the lakes have the capacity to for further development. Right. And I'm just wondering if they've gone back, because those charts were available at the time, and they should still be here somewhere in the office.
I would really appreciate having access to those or a copy of them. That would be great.
Yeah, that'd just be good to compare over a decade.
I really do appreciate having historical data. And I've put in the historical data from the Lake Hartman program and the sites where I duplicated some of those sites. I won't duplicate them again next year, but this year I wanted to, just because there's such a vast difference in how the samples are collected. So with the lab that I'm working with in Barrie, the samples have to be collected within 2 weeks, and they have to be kept cold, and they have to be delivered. Whereas the Lake Partner Program samples are collected, and they don't need to be refrigerated. They get mailed, and we don't often get the results for over a year. So I just needed to know whether or not how those compare. I don't know yet, because we don't have the results from the Lake Partner Program sampling for 2023, but that's the reason. I think they're probably going to be in line, because they were in line with historical data, but I just wanted to get them both in the same year and see. But I won't do that next year. There's no need for that. So.
We certainly appreciate that the mapping and how detailed it is, so the sites are easily identifiable. You can go from the numbers to the actual location on the map, and there are quite a few different sites, as you indicate, so that's excellent for us. Now, you'd mentioned, I haven't checked recently, but this information will be available on the township website.
Yes, I believe the E. coli data is up now. I have to double-check that. It's under environment on the township website. That's sort of our little piece of real estate
on the website.
Did you put the phosphorus and calcium data up yet?
Everything that you sent to me, I've forwarded to Mary to put on the website, I will confirm that.
Yeah.
Other questions about the data itself? I'm not sure about the actual bill. Are you talking about billing now for next year?
For the cost that were incurred for 2023.
Was that already in the budget?
It's in the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee.
Roshan says everything's okay?
Yes, it's in the budget in 2023.
Okay.
And we get like 17 bills per sampling from this one company, but they promised Tony that they're going to put it all, have an aggregate bill for Roshan, so or invoice anyway, but it is all paid for now. So
appreciate as well your conclusions that are drawn, rather than just all the numbers here too. You're drawing conclusions from these numbers, which is good, because I think for the average layperson to look at that and they can look at the variations, I suppose, of the numbers, when they occur, and that sort of thing, but to actually draw a conclusion from it, that makes it difficult. So,
well, my analysis isn't very sophisticated. I hope to get better at that, but, you know, I just did some very basic averages, but I'll have to get Carl to tell me I can go further with them. I did want to mention one thing, too. I like to support academic study, and so I'm uploading this data as well to what's the name of it? DataStream is the name of the company, and they're a foundation that holds data for lake studies all over the world, so that academics, when they need some data to analyze, to test a model or a theory, they can go and access the data and run it and see, you know, and draw conclusions from it, so that it goes beyond just what we need to know in terms of looking after our lake, so it's useful to others.
Councilor Kagan?
So you mentioned drawing conclusions, so I'm just looking at the data sets for E. coli from page 4 to 26, and you'll have, you know, what seem to be reasonable numbers, 23, 9, 64, and then a surge to page 4 and 2014, July 13.
Which lake is it?
So this is McKellar Bay.
Okay.
So we have a surge there of 580 at location A, which is right by Minerva Park.
Right.
And on that same page, location J, which is over by Fire Route 152. So you have some surges there, 301, 400, 298, 222.
So what are the conclusions that are drawn? And this is on every page. You can see some surges.
There are definitely some outlier results that happen. What we try to do, we don't always, we're not always able to, but we do try to resample again right away just to see whether or not that situation has settled. I don't know what would have given rise to the score of 468 CFUs on the 30th of July in McKellar Bay. So I have to assume that there was some event there. You know, whether or not it's people digging. That a couple of years ago we had a lot of digging at the side of the lake, and our E. coli levels near Minerva Park were 1,600, which was huge, but that was the disturbance of soil. It's possible that there are houseboats that are discharging into McKellar Bay. It's possible that there could have been a sewage leak or a septic system burst or something like that happened that we wouldn't know about. What all we can do is retest to see if it's settled, and what happened in the case. This one did settle, so we tested it again 2 weeks later, and it went down to 56, and then on the 27th it was down to 8. So whatever that was, it was a short-lived event. With the outlier in near Minerva Park a couple of years ago, that took all summer to settle down. And that was right beside the public beach. So it was very important that we monitor that, and we monitored it very carefully and quite frequently. But it took a long time to settle. But we never really know exactly why we get those big inputs. People say, well, it could be a flock of geese, but ordinarily, I know Nick was saying over near his place there were all kinds of geese this summer, but actually the E. coli levels were fairly low over there. So I was looking for them to see what it would be, but it wasn't. So it's just a case of monitoring, and I can't always, you know, figure it out exactly why it's so high in some places.
Any other questions?
Sorry, I can't be more specific on that.
No? Okay, well, thanks very much. Appreciate all of the work you're doing.
Thank you.
The detail. We'll hopefully get that other study to you or make it available as soon as we find it. Resolution 23-651, moved by Councillor Pekkanen, second by Councillor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the deputation from Jennifer Gent Fuller, Chair of the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee and Lake Steward for the Lake Manitowabe Community Association, regarding the 2023 lake water testing results for lakes in the Township of McKellar. Any further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Okay, now we've moved those around, so we're back to the public meeting. Resolution 23-652, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Ryan. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby move into a public meeting at
7:25 p.m.
to hold a public meeting for the proposed road allowance closure on Fox Farm Road as applied for by Andrew Snernitson. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Now, for this public meeting, we won't do the roll call again, but certainly if you're going to speak to the issue about the closure of the part of the Fox Farm Road, then I'd ask you to not only speak to the microphone or through Zoom, however you want to speak to us, but to state your name And what we will do, everything goes through the chair, and we'll just take your information that you have available for us, and any information that come in through correspondence. There won't be any decisions made tonight. It's just a matter of questioning, hearing from the public, and maybe getting further information on what the next step is in any procedures. So I'll start, first of all, by asking if any correspondence has been received on this particular issue.
One letter from the chief,
Dr. Holloway. Okay, now I notice that he's online as well, so I'm not sure whether we want to read that letter out or just maybe he'll speak to it when he has an opportunity. I believe he's still on there, so. Maybe we'll start, though. Okay, you're all set to speak to it, that's good. But we'll start with the applicant, Mr. Snurnison. And again, just, I don't know what's changed or hasn't changed in the meantime, but we want the public to be aware, yes? So you can go up and... there's been a bit more information now that has been put out to the adjoining property owner as well, so...
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Rob, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Perfect, okay. Okay, guys, so it's very important that it came to my attention that obviously information needs to be, I mean, we need to level set on the basis and then move from there, because even like Rob, and I'm not picking on you, we just discussed that matter with your wife, and it's obvious that more information is needed for public to actually understand what we're doing here. So essentially, as you might know, I will be very brief and then answer any questions. So essentially, we purchased that piece of land. Major misconception was that that piece of land was split in pieces, and that's really created a very confusing situation. That's why even before closing the deal, we engaged a real estate lawyer who actually provided, I'm not sure, Carly, if this document is available, but I mean, it was presented several times to the council. So a lawyer clearly stated that this lot is not split in pieces. This is one lot was right away granted for the community to use this particular road for the community purposes. So as a result, there is no setbacks required because it's still within my property. So again, it's just the right away. And that was a critical component to clarify. As a result of that, because of no need for any setbacks for my own property, it's completely, it was confirmed by developers, by experts which we brought on site, that it's a billable site as it is. So now, once that was confirmed by legal counsel and other experts, I started wearing my community hat, and I said, you know, guys, yes, we can build it, but because we, and Carolyn, if you don't mind, can you please share the screen with actual plan so people on Zoom can actually understand a little bit better what I'm referring to. So even though a lot itself is buildable as it is, I don't need any additional approvals. When I, as I mentioned, stopped wearing my community hat and I discussed it with the lawyers, like, okay, I can build it, but that will complete, I have to build closer to the right away. And I know that community has an inspiration to actually convert this road, God knows when, but eventually, into a municipal road. And if I build the way it is right now, I have to build closer to right-of-way, which let's call it the way it is. It's a road, but it is really a right-of-way. It will completely destroy our hopes, and by our, I mean mine as well, because I'm part of the community, to actually have this road converted into municipal road, because municipal road does have setbacks requirements. So as a result, when I discussed it with my lawyer, I said, okay, what can we do? And he proposed, I would say, ingenious solution, essentially, saying, okay, you can actually apply for an open road to be closed, so you have 66 feet or whatever, so you can move your house further from the right-of-way, further from the road, to actually allow this setback from quote-unquote future municipal road to be in place. So once this discussion is reopened, in the future, it's not going to be a showstopper because building it has been built closer than setbacks required. That's really the driver, the only driver behind that request. So again, as I mentioned, I'm willing to spend my own money to expand that. I hope a community will support that part. So again, not only community as a whole, including me, will benefit from it, because now we have a future-proof structure, essentially. Like Rob, I'm not picking on you, but for example, Rob, as a you have a right, if you wish, and it looks like you expressed your desire, to purchase half of that unopened road. It does not need to be like 33 feet, it has to be half. So I, when I talked to your wife, I mean, she mentioned that you would like to have access to the road. And if, for example, we split that blue unopened road, not like 33-33, but in half in a different way, you actually will have access, because your lower part can be yours and upper is mine, because that's my house will be. So I'm mostly interested, obviously, in the upper part, because that's where I need space to move it. But my point is, you will have access to the road from your property as well, because right now it's locked. You don't have access to the road because it's locked by my property and an open road. So it's a win-win-win, essentially, for anybody. And I'm not going to go into the benefits to the township. We already discussed that. I just would like to focus on a public meeting, public benefits. And as I mentioned, that's the whole driver behind it. Obviously, I need to know how much will it cost, but I'm willing to spend my money to actually make it happen or keep our dream alive. So I hope that's really clarified the whole driver behind it, because I mean, even though I presented multiple times already, somehow this messaging is not getting through. So again, hopefully this time around it actually resonates and we can unite behind this idea, because really it's not one person benefiting, it's just everybody benefiting one way or another, essentially.
Okay, well, maybe Rob will have something to say, Rob Soloway, but I'm just wondering, one statement you made that right now, he wasn't landlocked, but he's locked. To me, there's a right-of-way that leads into his property right now.
Right, I mean, directly from his property, you're absolutely correct. But I mean, when we discussed that matter with his wife a couple of days ago,
yeah,
they mentioned that I'm not going to go into private discussion, but essentially they would prefer to have access, like direct access to the road. And that's why I refer to that piece of land at the bottom, which will give them actual direct access to the road, not through the right-of-way, not through any other mechanism, but direct access to the Fox Farm.
Okay, Mr. Soloway, do you have any comments?
Obviously, you know, having direct access to Fox Farm Road is beneficial and something that I have to give some thought to. Having the fact that we have deeded access through the your current property, and that's already been approved, then, you know, the other thing that comes to mind is that, and I kind of documented this in the letter, is that the municipal road allowance is in existence, of which there's 66 feet of Foxburn Road potential to go in. And so if that is in existence, I'm not sure what the...
I can clarify that.
What would be the benefit in selling that road allowance so that we can move a structure back so that we can expand Foxburn Road where it is?
Okay, so let me clarify, because
okay,
you're getting
into
it. Go ahead.
Let me finish.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Any questions?
Yeah, sorry. So I think that's the complication that I'm seeing, is that if the municipal road allowance is in existence, and the goal is for a municipal road to be of the width that's necessary for a municipal road, would that not make sense to maintain the municipal road allowance the way that it is? I mean, I'm not a planner. I don't know. That's just my thoughts. So,
I would think planning-wise, it probably makes sense. We actually, most of us visited the site, and the actual topography suggests, because of the rock cliff, that it would never be opened up, or the potential is very low.
Yeah, that's a fair comment, and I'm in agreement to that. I mean, it's
Another side of the question was around, you made a statement that the current road is built up to the municipal standard. So let me challenge that. Width, yes, 66 feet, but there is another component to municipal road, is the setbacks. So even from the edge of the municipal road, you have to have 7.5 or 10 meters, depends, where you cannot build. That's really the essence of the issue. So if you build closer, you're not allowed if it's a municipal, but in my case, I can build 1 inch from 60, from the road, and that's really will completely destroy that setback, not the width of the road, but setback which is required by a municipal road. I hope it makes sense.
The other thing that we looked at, again, if we had that map up there, the plan, I'm just thinking, nobody has approached us from the organization in there. It's a, I don't know if it's a legitimate organization, loosely held people, or who it is. But the private, it goes off the Fox Farm public road onto the private road for a section. And your property in yellow is right up against there. But what about the east or the west side of that private section of road? Is that something that, again, it could be widened that way and then turned over to the township and made into a public road instead of going into your property? Now, they haven't approached us on that, but, I mean, it looks to me, looking at the map, that that's every possibility.
I mean, you can obviously blast it to 10 meters
in
each direction.
No, I'm saying on the west side, and you don't have the rock face on the west side as you go
that's
in.
That's very current. Yeah, that's correct.
No, but, I mean, setbacks are still the same.
Well, yes, but what I'm saying is the people in there, then what they could do if they wanted to go a municipal year-round, they could deed the land to the township on the west side of that private area of road and not bother your piece of property at all.
But you have to curve the road further, that's
right.
What you're saying?
Right.
Yeah, that's my point. So it is a cliff, not as steep. I'm sorry. If you blast and change the road even further and get an agreement from the land owner that they will give up land, which, I mean, that's a stretch. I mean, that's definitely a stretch. It's much easier to actually move my house further than convince somebody to give up land plus blast road with a curve. I assume you would like to curve it further. Technically, I mean, even down probably an option. But technically speaking, the way it is right now, that's the only option.
Anybody else wish to weigh in? As I said, public information to get information from the public, from council.
So, Simone, this is Leslie Chester. I'm the president of the Road Association. This is Nixon. We haven't had the opportunity to meet, but I've certainly been very involved in this issue. And my voice is really the voice of the entire Road Association. And I would just like to say that on the basis of the last point, moving to the west, that is waterfront. So if we decided that we wanted to expand the road, we would have to blast more on the right-hand side of the map or the left-hand side going up, which is exactly the process we went through when we built the road in the first place. So I'm not sure moving to the left is really an option because we'd be right in the water.
That would be before you get to the actual road that goes off. Once you pass that roadway, you're not on water?
Well, I mean, the whole point of this is if we were to expand the road, we have to expand the road all the way.
Right.
So we have to go from the end of the current road allowance. We have to expand through the cut-through and then travel down the road after Silver Fox, which is that tributary there to the left. And that is obviously a big endeavor, but I think I just wanted to answer your point about expanding to the left. Certainly you could, beyond Silver Fox, if the people are willing to do that, but the initial cut through would require not going to the left but going to the right. That is a big endeavor, and it's obviously something that everybody in the road would want to be part of and contribute to.
Okay, can I ask you as well, since we have you on the line here, about the road allowance closure and your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the road allowance closure is a is caught up in a bigger issue about this piece of land, and presumably you will have read my submission that I sent back several weeks ago about the nature of this piece, this very slim piece of property, and the fact that I'm urging the council to reflect back on how we got to this position in the first place of this sort of landlocked sliver of land, and whether we should be thinking more strategically about whether it's a smart play to sort of expand it when its waterfront is really, really negligible, and the access to the lake from that property is going to create danger to not only Simonson's family, but also to all of the people that need to access the road through that cut-through. So, I mean, we can argue about should we or shouldn't we sell the road allowance, but I think this has raised a very important point about, you know, what is the dream, and is the dream to have water access? And if the dream is there really water access on this piece of property? And I'm sure that, that Mrs. Simonson's family is hoping to be able to build a dwelling and have access to the lake. But as we all see from the picture, it's an extremely difficult thing to understand because all of the posts have been destroyed by boulders. And I think that the people who own the adjoining property will be, you know, very clear to ensure that their demarcation is observed. Does that make sense?
Okay, no, it's good to hear your opinion, yes. I guess one question on that, are you speaking for an association, a group, or just yourself?
No, I'm the president of the Foxconn Road Association. We have 20 members. And I've been involved in this road since it was built some 15 years ago. You know, this is not just me, this is everyone in the Road Association. They've been informed at every step of the way, and I think there are some of my my members here as well. And I'd also just like to talk to Rob's point, because I think, you know, the driveway that is existing, which was built for Jordana when she owned Solway's land, was understood to be across the right of way. So I don't understand why Rob would benefit from owning part of the township right of way, the township road allowance. I think, Rob, that was your point.
It was to a certain extent, yes, because. You know, it's an additional 33 feet, which, I mean, fair. I'm happy to take on an additional 33 feet of land based on cost. You know, does that provide me with any significant benefits at this point in time? Not really.
You've got acres to sell, not feet, right?
Well, this is it. You know, you know, there was a misconception when we first, when we originally purchased the property, and we were of the understanding that this sliver of land didn't exist, and that was not a municipal problem, that was more of a real estate problem. We've looked at title insurance and God knows those roads, but regardless, this was a sliver of land that was let go at taxation.
We've lost your feed.
Oops, sorry about that. it was a tangent. It was already
very difficult.
Sorry, guys. Yeah, I apologize. Can you hear me at all?
Yes, that's good now.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, I was just explaining how the sliver of land came to be in the first place. But regardless, you know, I guess from my standpoint, should the road allowance be allowed to be sold, I definitely am interested in the 33 feet. Does it significantly benefit me? Not really. So.
This is Sue. Sorry, I'm not sure if you can hear me. So I think going back just to what Rob was saying, I mean, I think it was very unfortunate just the way that all of this played out. Because as he mentioned, when we bought the property, we thought that it went to the road allowance. We were offered to purchase, or to the road, sorry, not to the road allowance. When we were offered to purchase the property, and part of the reason we didn't purchase it was because of that road allowance, and if it became a municipal road in the future, then, you know, it really wasn't beneficial, and our property would go to that municipal road. So it was kind of our, when we looked at it and we consulted, it really didn't make sense for us to purchase it, because eventually our property probably would go to the road because that road allowance was there.
And that's really the misconception we decided to address right away, because the previous owner actually explained it was, as Leslie mentioned in her letter, multiple previous owners were upset with neighbors' view of how their property should be viewed, and that's why even before we purchased, we lawyered up. And that's why we have so many submissions from lawyers, specifically because, like Sue, when we discussed it, you were surprised that your property is not going to the Volkswagen Road. I totally understand. Leslie was surprised that this is a buildable lot. So many people were surprised because everybody built their assumptions, and that's why we went to the source. So we completed several, multiple searches. Legal team completed multiple searches. They concluded in their legal assessments, and that's really what we actually live in by. So opinions, my opinion changed in this process because, again, I didn't know until I see the whole legal and research background, which shows specifically where the road is. And I was planning to buy this land a year ago, but I when I saw the plan, I said, like, are you crazy? And I decided not to buy it. And then when they put it on sale again this year, I said, you know what? Let's go through the lawyers. So again, I was in exactly the same boat as you are. Exactly the same boat. It's very confusing, but now it's not. So again, it's really straightforward, and that road closure makes it even more straightforward from the municipal road perspective, as well as, I mean, Rob's access to the road directly without any right of way, so and some other stuff. So I don't see, to be honest with you, honestly, I don't see any downside to this closure whatsoever. So again, everybody benefit from it. So again, there is absolutely, in my view, other than misconceptions, and I've heard quite a few misconceptions. Again, I'm not going to discuss it because it's people's opinion. I respect that. But again, I really live by the legal components.
I think he agrees with you that you do have access at this point. He mentioned that before. So
yeah.
Right. Yeah. We do have access.
Yes, I mean, I mentioned that. Yes, you do. But I mean, I'm abstracted through your own property, not through my property.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to dispute that. At this meeting, because I don't think it's beneficial.
That's okay. I mean, and you don't have to buy it. I mean, it's your right to buy half of the, and it doesn't have to be split by 33-33. We can split it anyway. Split it. I mean, it's up to us to discuss. Obviously, it has to be half and half. You have the right to buy half. You don't need to buy half, or we can discuss which part would be beneficial for you and me to buy. And as I mentioned, I directly highlighted why I need that part, because I need to be able, I would like to move house further from the road. So that's really my driver. I assume you would benefit from access, direct, uninterrupted access to the road, but again, it's up to you to decide.
Mr. Mayor, may I ask you a question?
Yes.
Respect to the council. What is in the interest of council to sell this road allowance, please? That's something I'd love to understand.
What is the interest?
Yeah. What is the what is your motive? What's the benefit to council of selling a piece of the road land, particularly one that leads to the waterfront?
Well, we've had a resident approach us, just as you mentioned here, with a situation, and we have closed up and sold road allowances in the past, as recently as this year. Actually, there's another one in the works, too, so it's not unheard of. And we have to look at, of course, do we have any other access in there? I mentioned this earlier on in the discussion, that to lead right into Manitowabing across from the camp. And because the way this road was designed in the beginning, part of it went onto private property, which I personally never agreed to. But because of the topography again and why it didn't stay on the road allowance, and I think also because people didn't want just everybody going in and out, that there was a section that was private that they could control. So I'm looking at what we have now, and we visited the site. The road allowance, really, the way it's situated now, and you may be correcting me on this because I didn't think there'd ever be a road put in there, but you did it. And we're just looking at the rock face, and as far as helping the township in any way, it really doesn't, and yet it will help a landowner to meet the requirements, and perhaps in the future, not that we need more year-round roads, but apparently this is in the mix too, that the private road may actually apply for a municipal road in the future. As it is right now, if we keep that road allowance, that would never be a municipal road that I can see, unless there's an awful lot of blasting done.
So thank you for your answer. So how do you as council go about making a decision on this issue? What are the things you're weighing up?
I think it's that's something, again, we'll have to discuss. We're not making a decision this evening. We have to weigh in what you've said, what everybody else has said, and then we'll talk to Ina and Carly as well with the procedure from here on. So we would, after taking the information that's been provided to us, make a decision, and as I say, it won't be happening this evening. So again, if there's any further information that we should be aware of, I think it'd be good to send that forward to us.
I would always say, like, that cut through is, you know, as the president of the Road Association, it's my constant worry, because it is fairly vulnerable. It needs constant upkeep. But if you've all been there, if you look up to the left, there are a huge number of boulders. And I really come to this not just from the point of view of expanding the road, but really safety on the road. You know, it's a narrow road. That's why it's not a township road or a township maintained road. And we're constantly having to think about how to make sure that cut through is safe. It's constantly washboarded. But I worry about the boulders and the stability of the whole infrastructure around that piece of property. And, you know, I have to voice that because it is a big concern. It may not be the primary reason for raising this today, but, you know, parking on that cut-through is absolutely not acceptable. And building on the side of the piece of property before the road allowance is going to potentially put a lot of pressure on the blasting that was done when we built this road. So that would be something else I would really appreciate you guys thinking about.
No, appreciate that. It's I'm not sure, again, the plan on what's to be done with that particular piece of property with blasting, et cetera, maybe Mr. Snurnison can talk to that. I guess the other concern we would have, if the township decided to open up that road allowance, there'd be blasting involved as well. That's not something we're anticipating, certainly, but I'm just wondering what the applicant is actually proposing there. I don't know what his plans are as far as you know, blasting or
septics or anything that requires excavation and blasting.
Yeah,
I'm not planning to blast for sure. There is no need for that. So again, absolutely no need. And as I mentioned, knowing the history and misconceptions around that lot. So we did a lot of due diligence even prior, and as I mentioned, quite a few expert construction companies came. Nobody expressed any concerns whatsoever. And they were ready to start building tomorrow, if we say go ahead. Essentially, I'm not planning to start building tomorrow, but my point is it's definitely not a concern from the expert standpoint. The only, again, moving it further from the cliff will help, but again, even the way it is, it's not a concern.
Okay, sorry. Yes? Ms. Chester, go ahead.
Sorry, no, I agree that moving it further away is a good thing, but I'm not sure whether experts who are willing to build your septic tank are really worrying as I do about all the people coming through the cut through.
Again, it's a license process, and government licenses that process, so again, they know they follow all the procedures, if you're talking about septic.
Yeah, and eventually, obviously, the township planner is going to have to approve anything that you're proposing on this property. Have you had that discussion with Chris?
He's not the planner, but...
And we're not building anything as of right now.
Yeah,
we discussed with Chris, and Chris, like, setbacks. That's really what triggers the discussion. So, yes, I discussed setbacks with Chris, and that's why I involved a lawyer to solve for that. Because, again, I mentioned to Chris that municipal road, and Chris was... Anyway, so we had an official discussion because we're not building anything, but he knew all the setbacks, and that's why we're actually trying to move it further, so to allow it to be converted into municipal road if need be, essentially.
I would like to understand Ernest's perspective, if you have a voice on this, Lawrence, in terms of the small parcel of land that actually goes into the lake. So the Crupes and the Rubens obviously have a point of view on this. Do either of you have a voice?
I'm not sure who you're addressing them to again.
Sorry, that's really, it's nothing to do with an open road. So again, asking me?
No, I'm asking Lawrence. So we're talking now about the actual waterfront piece of the land. And that's abutted by the Crupes and the Rubens. And I just wondered if either of them would like to just speak about their perspective on this and the impact on them of this potential building and the impact on the cut through.
Another member of the public, that'd be good. Lawrence, we're not aware of who Lawrence is, so maybe he can introduce himself.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Lawrence Rubin. As mentioned by Leslie, I do have the abutting property. I share the same concerns around the waterfront that Leslie brought forward. I don't know whether or not the municipality considers that usable, whether or not there would be the ability for a dock and how that would be supported given the narrow strip of water there. Safety concerns of people traversing with the cut-in to access that is a concern, as Leslie mentioned. And, you know, without knowing, as Leslie mentioned, you know, some of the surveying identification is not relatively visible, you know, understanding where that is and how we manage the abutment to the property.
Okay, just
the security of our own property. So definitely concerns there. And again, of course, as a member of the Road Association, share the concerns provided by Leslie regarding impacts to the cut-in with any, you know, construction in the area. Understand, you know, if there's experts that have weighed in, if that can be shared, that would be helpful to understand that there won't be issues that would impact our ability to access the road and our properties with any further build in that area.
Okay, could we just ask too how you access your property at this point?
So my property is accessed through the cut-in, and we live off of Silver Fox, so that little abutment that you see is how we access our property.
Okay, so no way There's no access up to. You have to go off the other arm. Okay.
Yes, the other arm. So it's possible.
Okay.
Thank you, Lawrence. Margaret, do you want to say anything? Okay, so maybe we're not hearing from Margaret. But just for clarity, Margaret lives in the cottage or the house just before the cut-through. So anything that happens in that area is obviously going to affect her property. But maybe she's not interested in speaking, so that's cool. So, I think you've understood that we have a lot invested in this road. We all put money in our own pockets to build it. And we have a really strong association that maintains that road every year. Anyone who's building has to pay $3,000 to $5,000 in terms of a sort of a road damage thing. And Mrs. Smith, I don't know that you know that, but it is important for you to consider. But you know, imagine you've got children or grandchildren that want to access the lake, and you've got people speeding up that road for access to water. That to me is the biggest question here for everybody, regardless of the road allowance, is your dream to have a waterfront property? And if it is, you know, please make sure that you really do have access to the water.
Okay, so let me address it, and let me refer to the letter from the lawyer who spent several weeks assessing that, and it specifically says, again, I don't want to, I again, respect your opinion, but it specifically says that this lot has a waterfront access. So, but going back to an open road component, which is actually in discussion here, I'm not sure, I'm a bit surprised by the resistance, because again, it's really, community should benefit from that for sure, and I try to be as explicit as possible. I understand overall resistance, but at the same time, when we zoom in into the issue at hand, which is an open road, once again, road is not used, it will have financial benefits, again, to the community, to the township. Obviously, it will be able to build, for example, bigger house, better, more taxes, like stuff like that. So again, it's definitely a win-win from the objective perspective, and it's confirmed by experts and lawyers and everybody who has a professional opinion. I hope emotional component will follow, and really we can unite behind that, because it's definitely in favor in actual, it will benefit the whole community. Me as part of community, wearing that community hat, is trying to move this agenda forward. So hopefully
so
you will support
me. Understand how small children trying to access the water and a bit of a dangerous cliff run is a benefit to the community. But maybe we need to take that piece offline.
Trust me, I have two kids and the safety is my top priority. There are many, many solutions which I already explored, which can make it very safe. And I would definitely, I have a swimming pool at home, which is fenced. So again, trust me, I take this stuff very seriously and will not jeopardize safety of my kids or anybody involved. That's really, again, a community is my one of my priorities. So that's why I'm doing it. And again, there are many solutions how to make it safe and accessible.
So my insurance agents will also probably have a point of view on this as well. If the risk assessment of the road were to go up, that obviously means that everybody pays more. So I'd appreciate if you consider that as well.
Okay, well, thanks for all of your comments. And as I say, no decisions will be made this evening unless council has some questions for clarification. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for attending online.
Thank you, everybody.
You're certainly welcome to stay. You're welcome to stay for the entire meeting. So. That
Resolution 23-653, moved by Councilor Chekanen, second by Councilor Zulak, be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McCullough is hereby reconvened into regular session at 8.05 p.m. Call a question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. Here's a resolution dealing with the. And we have resolution 23-654. We'll see how council approaches. Moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Haskin. Whereas a public meeting was held for the proposed road allowance closure on Fox Farm Road as applied for by Andrew Snerdinson. And whereas the abutting property owners, Rob and Sue Solway, have expressed interest by way of a letter addressed to council in purchasing a 33-foot of the 66-foot road allowance. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby direct the Deputy Clerk / Planning Assistant to send the Solways an application for road closure authorized under bylaw number 2011-24, and further that a report to Council be presented at a future meeting to outline the process and procedure of selling the road allowance to both property owners before the land is deemed surplus. Sounds reasonable. So we have two applicants as opposed to one applicant.
Yes,
so.
I hope you informed Mr. Sullivan that in order to be able to purchase, they have to split all the costs. And again, 33 feet is the default option. There are other options how it can be split 50-50, but essentially they entitle for half of the land as an adjacent property if they pay all the fees, 50% of all the fees.
Yeah, that makes sense. Any further discussion on this? Call the question then, all those in favor? Opposed? Okay, you want a recorded vote?
No.
Okay, so it's carried then. Okay, we're down to number 14 on the agenda. Resolution 23-655, moved by Councillor Kekanen, second by Councillor Zulak, be resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby approve the minutes of the October 3rd, 2023 regular meeting of Council and the October 13th, 2023 special meeting of Council as circulated. Any discussion of those minutes? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. To 16.1. Resolution 23-656, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Ryland. Be it resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the minutes of the June 28th, 2023 and August 16th, 2023 Board of Health meetings, the June 28th, 2023 minutes of the Board of Health Personnel Policy, Labor / Employee Relations Committee, and Finance and Property Committee meetings. Discussion of those minutes? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 23-657, moved by Councillor Kekanen, second by Councillor Zulak. Be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby received the minutes of the June 26, 2023 and August 28, 2023 meetings of the Parry Sound Area Planning Board. Any discussion of those minutes? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed, carried. The resolution 23-658, moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Haskin, be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby received the minutes of the May 5th, 2023 Spring 2023 meeting and the draft minutes of the September 29th, 2023 Fall 2023 meeting of the District of Parry Sound Municipal Association. Any discussion of those minutes? All the question, all those in favor? None opposed? Carried. 23-659, moved by Councilor Zulak, signed by Councilor Kekkonen. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive report, Fire Department, RFD-2023-15, month-end status updates for September 2023 from Fire Chief Robert Morrison for information purposes. Any discussion of the report? Councilor Kekkonen?
See, in this report as well, it mentions training using our R1 platform. We can get some clarification of what that is.
My understanding of R1 is that they only fight fires the exterior of a fire. They're not qualified to go into a building. I would have to have Rob confirm that, but that's my understanding.
Okay. Any other questions?
So it says recruits and members of the department are now free to commence firefighting level 2 training using our R1 platform to continue their learning process and improve on their skills. So if we can get some clarification of what the R1 platform is.
Yeah, it probably has to do with the use of equipment and as Ina just said, the outside, and then before they do anything inside, there'd be other precautions to take, and with the hose and any number of things. But that's good that the fire chief can explain that to us. Okay, call the question then. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 23-660, moved by Councillor Haskins, seconded by Councillor Ryan. Be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the two quotes for dyed and clear diesel fuel tanks from the Prairie Sound Fuels and Pasco Industries, Inc., and further that the quotation provided by Prairie Sound Fuels be accepted in the amount of $10,358 plus HST of $1,346.54 for a total of $11,704.54 for two fuel tanks and 2 metered electric pumps, and further that the Director of Operations will quote fuel prices from area fuel companies to ensure the township is receiving competitive pricing. Discussion? Councillor Zulak?
I was just wondering, on the Hasco estimate, it says it comes with the hose and the nozzle, but I don't see that on the person fuels. I was wondering, did you know, Roshan?
Sorry?
Would you know if on the Prairie Sound Fuels one it comes with a nozzle and a hose? Like on Hasco, it says it comes with a nozzle and the hose down at the bottom here.
Yeah. I
have no idea. Yeah, you don't know. I was just wondering if that was the difference in the price, or if they had to pay extra for the nozzle and hose, or did they maybe they have one?
That could be.
Yeah. Okay. That's all.
So when it talks about installation, so is that just bringing the tank on site and unloading, or is it installing bollards and the platform that base that it needs to be on as well?
Okay, Roshan had this conversation with Greg in regards to installation.
I can't help you with that.
Yeah, all it says on here, must be installed, doesn't say that they're actually doing that installation, as you're saying, the platform, and these are all above ground, right?
These are above ground.
Yeah. So it'd have to be set on a certain concrete foundation, yes.
With boulders.
Good question.
Projecting it as well.
Yeah.
They have them there now, right? They have tanks they're replacing?
This is another location, though, I think, this one.
Okay.
The way he spoke, because if anything ever happens to the addition,
okay,
then he did talk about relocating. So it might be a new location. What's the time frame on this? Because it sounds like there's more information we need. Their invoice or their estimate's good for 30 days, is it?
It says 25th of October.
Oh, okay.
On that one, it says 25th of October for Pasco.
Yeah, the Prairie Sound Fuels doesn't appear to say it, so at least if it did, I missed it.
received a report, did we not, or did we, on the actual installation? Greg never provided anything that was included. Oh, it sounds to me like we don't have full information to actually make a decision here on whether he plans on doing this through a separate project to have the base prepared, or whether it's part of the contract. I'm not sure the way I read it that it is part of it. I almost get the impression they're just bringing the tanks. But if we've got the 25th as a cutoff here, well, the only thing that would be different is that the price may change after the 25th. It's still interested in bidding on it, I'm sure. I don't know what your thoughts are. Councilor Zuna?
I'm sure they know what he knows what he's talking about, and he must know that it's got to go on a base of some kind. So maybe they're going to do that themselves. Or, and as far as the nozzle and the hose, there's not that much difference. And I'm thinking they probably have a nozzle and a hose now. So
yeah, I'm not too concerned about the nozzle and hose, but the actual
base.
Yeah, good question. And he may know, but it'd be nice if he let us know so that we can make a decision tonight.